Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest show on earth!
And welcome back to the greatest show on earth that is Talking Terror. As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G. Welcome you back to this episode of the show, where tonight we're going to be talking about the Demonic Themes film pick of the week, Suitable Flesh, from 2023, directed by Joe Lynch. Now, I should say this at the start of the show. There is a storm rolling through California at the moment, so we may or may not be joined by the Demonic Dean because of power issues, so hopefully he'll be able to join us, but we're going to fucking carry on, as it were, because as always, I'm joined by the bold and the beautiful, the Go-Geek Keith.
It's all about the Suitable Flash, brah, the Suitable Flash, and the Suitable Flash. I love the Suitable Flash, brah. What is happening, everybody? Welcome to yet another episode of Talking Terror. Yes, indeed, like the King said, has given the information already. A storm happens to be passing through the area of the Dean's residence, and it is knocking out power, which throws off their Wi-Fi, and they use some kind of like enhancer thing or whatever it is, and it just fucks with everything, and it's not good enough for them to be able to boot up, or him to boot up. I mean, you know, I don't know what his pronouns are, but I'm pretty sure it's not them. But this way he can get on. So yes, hopefully his shit gets restored and he gets on before the end of the show, maybe by at least the time to talk about his movie pick of the week, Suitable Flash, brah. But aside from that, welcome. Talking Terror. Did I already say that? I might have already said that. I don't know. I'm feeling kind of, you know, I don't know. Hyper tonight, man. The Suitable Flash got me going.
That is fucking so sweet, brah. So we are just flying by the seat of our pants right now. Dean is updating us the best that he can about the power. It came back on. Internet's trying to load, so it's going to be momentarily. Internet's trying to load, so you know, he's got all that shit going on. But as you know, we did have a pay-per-view on Saturday, the Royal Rumble. The road to WrestleMania has fucking begun. So we could definitely talk about that until the Dean shows up and tells us to shut the fuck up about it. But with that being said, what did you think about the Royal Rumble?
If I'm going to be perfectly honest, you know, the Royal Rumble is probably, you know, my favorite pay-per-view, you know, or whatever they call them now, premium live events, the PLEs. You know, I love the Royal Rumble. I like the fun of it, you know, and I know for the most part we know who's going to win, but, like, it's just always a blast to see what kind of surprises, you know, who comes out that we haven't seen in forever, you know? And we know that, you know, this person who randomly just comes out is somebody they hired for the night, you know, just to get some pop going. You know, maybe they're, like, local to whatever city they're in. But it's all part of the enjoyment that is the Royal Rumble. And obviously the other thing for the Royal Rumble is it is the very start, the very first brick on the road to WrestleMania. You know, the penultimate, the pinnacle of what the WWE gets to every single year. Storylines get resolved, new stories maybe start to get like a little bit of a beginning push. You know, people get enhanced. They move on to whatever the next part of, like, whatever their latest thing is going to be. You know, fucking history is made. Stories are fucking told. You know, the greatest fucking moments occur at WrestleMania, but the Royal Rumble is what starts all of that. This year's Royal Rumble, for, you know, lack of any kind of other way to explain it, was kind of a letdown, man. It was kind of a bummer. The matches overall, including the two Rumble matches, were not all that great. You know, the Women's Rumble, I thought, was much better than the men's. at least it had a couple of surprises in it. You know, the
men's
Rumble had fucking Bupkis. You know, the only big surprise I heard is that, I guess, Bron Breakker, apparently that was supposed to be Brock Lesnar. But, like, something didn't go through. So everything that Bron Breakker did during his part in that match was all supposed to be what Brock Lesnar did, which wasn't much because ultimately he gets eliminated too. So, you know, it's kind of a letdown, kind of a bummer, you know, and I know coming out of it as well, CM Punk gets injured, you know, so now that takes, you know, a possible match that was building, you know, an actual storyline, you know, with Seth Rollins in him and kind of throws that in the trash because he's not going to be ready in time for Mania. So now, you know, they have to rewrite and figure out what they're going to do, which, I mean, I think we've been, you know, talking about forever is they just really need to bring in The Rock, let him take Roman Reigns' belt, put that belt out to the wind. Let's get some new blood, you know, holding that belt, which I'm sure what they'll just do is give it to fucking Brock Lesnar again. And yeah, and that's that, you know, and I guess they're going to start doing the build up for Cody Rhodes to finish his story by beating another champion instead of the other champion, which makes no sense. So realistically speaking, I don't see them not putting him up against Roman Reigns. If he's going to finish his story has to be finished against the guy he couldn't beat last year. It makes zero sense for him to come up against Seth Rollins now. So hold on. In the tournament, was it him versus Seth Rollins in the finals for that belt?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. so no matter what, you kind of got like a fucking, all right, so it's already built in. Yeah, I don't know, man. Whatever.
Yeah, it was
power grid was shut off by Dickless here. They caused an explosion. Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
He doesn't.
No dick. Yeah, very true.
At least the women's Royal Rumble match was kind of fun, having some surprise entrants like Jordynne Grace and Naomi, Monkey's Girl coming back, you know, and to be in it. I did call it for Bayley, and she did win. And the men's Royal Rumble match was so disappointing because the only kind of new entrant you had was Andrade El Dolo, who had been with the company prior, and he showed up. And, yeah, the Bron Breakker entrant, knowing that that was supposed to be Brock Lesnar, but then you find out about everything that happened with Vince McMahon, dirty little old man that he is, and everything he's going up against right now with everything that he had to say with the woman in question. It's interesting because, of course, Slim Jims was pulling out of Royal Rumble because of everything that happened. But once Vince said, you know what, I'm out, they're like, oh, we're right the fuck back in. All right, Slim Jims is back, baby. You know, it's a lot of behind-the-scenes shit that's going on right now. I don't know if you've read the texts that are on Google right now that Vince sent to this woman, but, yeah, I was like, but you just expect that from Vince. He's that guy. He's just a dirty old man.
I'm going to chime in here there is a lot of shit going on behind the scenes right now because apparently while playing with his Bob Backlund cock ring and Big John Stud ass rammer, Vince is also pooing on his female employees. So, legitimately, there is a lot of shit going on behind the scenes these days in the world of professional wrestling.
There is a lot. There's a lot to take in. There's a lot to fucking digest when it comes to that. But, yeah, so, Dean, you are here. How is the power situation in California? You doing okay?
Well, it's doing fine, as right? So our house, just like the location of our house. And if you like walk driveway, it's pretty much fine. But inside of our house is like a signal dead zone. And without the extender that I had to argue with Verizon for ages to get, there is no signal inside of our home. So when we lose power, we legitimately don't have any internet. We can't get a text message to go through. It's not like, oh, the power's out, but we can still be on the network, like out in the world, you know, like the LTE or the 5G, whatever it is. Like, we just have no signal. So that's what happened. It literally, at 5:51, the power went out. And that tends to happen a lot here when it rains, because the power grid infrastructure is so fucking ancient, and PGE does nothing but set California on fire because they don't fix anything forever. So we lost power like a week or so, but it was out for like 4 or 5 hours. So we were like actually like about to light some candles and just settle the fuck in. And thankfully it was just out for like 10 minutes, but that would have been, if I lived in a normal place, I would have just been able to call in from my cell phone and do the show. I can't do it with no power. We actually have, a landline phone, that we have given the number to nobody. That's strictly for when the power goes out in case of emergencies. Cause you know, we technically do air danger area, and God forbid there was a bad fire and the power's out. Like, there's no way that we would even know that there was an evacuation notice. So we have a landline for like to get emergency calls. The only reason, I don't even know the number, by I have it in a note in my phone, but yeah, so the power's on and we're here, and Vince McMahon is a fucking, we're ready to do the show, and Walter Peck.
Yeah, from fucking Hollywood, California.
Well, there we go. I mean, you know.
Mr. Spoiler
King
right there.
We lost Eugene. I guess that signal wasn't quite strong enough.
Wait, am I are you not hearing me?
No, you're good.
You were
good for now.
Am I gone?
It out, and then now you're back, but then you were gone, and then you're back.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Okay, Spoiler
good.
From Hollywood, California. Did you know that William Atherton was going to be in Ghostbusters?
Here.
I didn't.
I made it.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
I know.
Such,
I know. Like,
fucking
everybody was waiting in
here.
Suspense to determine whether or not that was going to happen. You know. Yeah. It's a real spoiler. Oh, look! There's a member of the cast. What a spoiler!
It is to us. I only wanted to watch the first trailer, nothing else afterwards. I was like, I'm not getting into it.
I have only seen that one trailer that came out.
Yeah, me
the
too.
One that starts with the Cruel Summer song, and that's
yep.
it. I have not seen any other trailer. I had no intention of seeing any other trailer. I would like
same.
To go into the fucking movie. No, and I get it, Dean. Don't get me wrong. I get it. William Atherton realistically is not any big fucking part. He's just a bit character that's on the side. You know, it's more of like a character cameo nod to the original film. But still, it's the kind of thing that they put in trailers that kind of ruin these fucking nice surprises. This is what we complain about week in and week out about what they do with these trailers, revealing plot points or fucking characters that they shouldn't be revealing.
My point said, get it. I never thought of it as, oh my God, I can't believe the trailer told us that this character was in it. And I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority here, but I thought that Ghostbusters Afterlife was like just fine,
right.
So desperate and waiting in suspense for Frozen Empire. It's not like, oh my God, I can't wait to see this movie and I want to know nothing about it and go in blind. Like, I'm like kind of looking forward to seeing it, but like, you know, like,
I want that for
you really fucking,
movie.
You, like, you, the day, you really
that?
Fucking care that
don't
you
understand
Richard Adderton,
that,
like, you really fucking care that, you know?
I want that for every movie. Even if it's not a movie I'm excited for, I want that feeling for every film. I go to the movie theaters for that feeling, for that excitement, for that moment, you know? So if that moment gets spoiled, then it's kind of like, well, that kind of sucks. And again, like I said, really not a big deal. But honestly, I would not have known it unless you said it. You know, or if like some, or the only other way it happens, some random asshole throws like a picture up on like fucking Facebook, and I happen to be scrolling, and it's like, oh man, William Atherton fucking cameo, you know, fucking Mayor Dick or whatever the fucking name is. Look at him in the movie, and I'm like, man, this is
Walter
why
Peck.
I avoid social media. Yeah, Walter Peck, Mayor Dick, it's all the fucking same.
Lenny, the mayor from Ghostbusters? Yeah, I know. No.
He wasn't
you know.
Even the mayor. He was like from the Environmental Protection Agency.
He was the EPA guy.
EPA
I know exactly
guy.
Who he was. I know who he was. I know he wasn't the mayor. I'm just having fun with the fucking words, Dean. Okay? He's also, isn't he also one
okay,
of the
have
fucking,
your fun, then.
Isn't he,
have
isn't
your
he
fun.
The villain from Real Science? He's like
yes,
a teacher
is.
Or whatever.
Yes,
he
is.
Okay.
Yes.
Popcorn House
yes,
at the end.
He totally is. No, yeah, from Real Genius, not Weird Science. Real Genius.
Real Genius, not Real Science. Real Genius, yes. Thank you. Thank you
real
for the question.
Yeah, he was masterful in the mid 80s to the early 90s.
Masterful.
Playing that kind of smarmy, arrogant dickhead of a
the
fucking
dickhead,
character.
Yeah.
Like, he had that role, like, down pat through, like, central casting. Like, you need, like a smug asshole that just has, like, a punchable
mm-hmm.
face. Like, Real Genius, obviously, the fucking Die Hard movies.
Yeah.
You know, and Ghostbusters.
You know, see, now what,
like
if,
that
you know
guy,
what if the new Die Hard was coming out and I was like, oh, look, William Atherton's in it.
Hmm? Oh. I could fucking care less.
You'd be like, oh,
this
is guy,
like,
reporter guy.
Oh, my God, the reporter from Ghost. Oh, it's a fucking spoiler. But yeah, as I look at his filmography here, you know, he has been steadily working in movies and TV all through this time, not really in much of anything that I have seen, but he's been a steady working actor.
Mm-hmm.
In Biodome, that's right. He was the main doctor in Biodome.
Yes,
he
was.
Biodome. and yeah, so I am excited that he'll be there, and I would not have felt any different one way or another if I knew or did not know coming in, because I hear you saying, oh, that's what I want from every movie, but like, I don't think like a piece of casting is that big a deal. I feel differently if it was like Split. If people were like, oh, Bruce Willis is in Split, I feel like something like that, that's like a fucking surprise, right? But I just feel somebody playing a fucking character that they've played before in the series is not that big of a deal. And that's my own personal opinion.
I don't know, I get that totally, but it's one of those things where I try to just avoid as much as I can about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan. So I saw that first trailer, I was like, I'm good. I'm honestly good until March when it comes out, and then I'll see what happens. And it's hard to avoid spoilers. Like, you know, when you saw it, you're like, oh, shit, William Atherton's coming back as Walter Peck. It's like, that's cool, but I kind of didn't want to know, because I kind of wanted to just go into that movie and being like, oh, shit, he's back, the head of the EPA. Like, you know, it's you know, but it's hard to avoid spoilers in social media these days. Like, the Ghoul has said it many times, where you're excited about a movie, but social media has a way of spoiling fucking everything. So you just have to just kind of hope that you don't see something that spoils it. And it's not a big spoiler, you know, like you had said, Dean. But at the same time, it's like you want to watch that movie and be like, oh, shit, they brought him back? I was talking last week, actually, with the Ghoul about Empire Magazine. And their coverage of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, where they were revealing Janine being in the Ghostbusters uniform, the flight suit and shit like that. I was like, God, I wish I didn't see that, because I kind of want to be surprised. I kind of want to, you know, have those moments not knowing going in that's going to happen.
Well said, King.
You know? And if it gets destroyed, it gets destroyed. But at the same time, you know, we're not in that age of all of us. Where back in the day, those things were just kind of a surprise. But with you being here, Dean, what are we talking about horror news-wise? What do you got for us?
Well, tonight on this episode of Talking Terror, we are covering Suitable Flesh. And
yes, we are.
I would have had this item as a story regardless, but in March will be the release of Suitable Flesh in a fully functional 4:3 full frame aspect ratio VHS tape release. that you can pre-order right now if you felt the need to have this film on VHS. You can pre-order it right now for $25. There was also a $45 edition that was signed by Joe Lynch, but that was limited. I think it was 250 copies, but those are sold out. But if you wanted to have suitable flesh on VHS, $25 will do the trick, and you can expect shipment sometime in March.
$25, little man.
That is
put that
shit
in my hand.
And then you owe me, that jungle love.
My jungle love.
Yo.
No, ya.
Very cool, though, that VHS is kind of making a comeback over the past couple of years. Like, Dean, I know you love vinyl, and now VHS is currently kind of having its renaissance of making a comeback with a lot of these modern releases being made into VHSs. And we'll talk about Suitable Flesh later on in the episode, but yeah.
We will.
Definitely.
We will.
Feels like a 90s VHS special. But all right, very cool. What else are we talking about?
So I've been, I've had the news desk up and running for the last several weeks. So I do have a couple of items here that are a couple of weeks old. So if these are things that by chance had been talked about, feel free to stop me at any time. But it seems that in the world of Blumhouse, even though they put out Split and The Invisible Man and The Black Phone and Megan and the new Halloween trilogy, et cetera, that Five Nights at Freddy's was the highest grossing film in the Blumhouse universe.
It was.
And it's been confirmed that a sequel is in development. Star Josh Hutcherson has confirmed this. He says right now they're currently nailing down the story and that everyone is chomping at the bit to get going as soon as possible.
Ghoul, Dean, have you seen Five Nights at Freddy's?
I have
not. Of course. I saw it in the theater because I have children that love Five Nights at Freddy's, which is why it's not a surprise that it was that it did what it did for Blumhouse. Unlike some of their other stuff, this is something that isn't like an in-house thing. You know, this has its own established lore for many years. It's got a huge following. This is one of those where it was like multiple companies. I'm surprised Blumhouse ended up with the property because I don't see how other companies just missed out on grabbing it, you know, because, again, it played upon all of the stuff that we've seen, you know, create nightmare fuel with, like, Chuck E. Cheese and shit like that and just, like, made it into a film, you know, first a video game and then a film. But they did well, though, I have to say. The movie was better than I really expected it to be. I had an enjoyable time watching it. You know, the kids really liked it. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff, all Easter eggs and things that they know from the games and from watching, you know, YouTube clips and all the stuff that they do these days because, you know, sometimes they don't actually play the games. They just know of them and then watch videos about them. All the stuff that they knew on that. And for me, it was an enjoyable, you know, PG-13 ride.
Glad you liked it.
I didn't have a problem with that at all.
Thanks.
I watched it with the monkey on Halloween night at his evil lair, and I thought it was good. I had some problems with the plot because I was like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But once they brought in the romantics talking in your sleep, I was like, all right, that's fucking cool. But, of course, Matthew Lillard fucking stole the show. As he always does. I'm a huge Lillard fan. Dean, if you have not seen it yet, it's on Peacock.
Should I William Atherton him? No, I won't. See, I could, though. But
here's the thing. I don't give a fuck
what?
If you do.
What, Dean? You don't give a fuck, right? No, whatever. Fine.
No.
I'm still not going to do it.
Spoil Five Nights at Freddy's, please.
I haven't.
Please, if it'll make you feel better, if you need to get your revenge because, you know, William Atherton is in Frozen Empire, spoil something about Five Nights at Freddy's. Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
Unlike your favorite EPA agent, I have integrity. Thank you.
What?
Angela's got a dick at the end of Sleepaway Camp. How about that?
Oh, man, I've never seen that. You ruined it.
Oh, well. There you go. Surprise, surprise.
Hey, Joel,
anybody anybody listening, I'm sorry. I just broke, like, the biggest cardinal rule in horror films for you, if you ask me anyway.
Yeah, you spoiled, you spoiled the fucking movie from 1986.
Done.
Great. You spoiled an almost 40-year-old movie for our listening audience.
Isn't it 1986?
I'm sure they're going to be raging right now.
Isn't it 1983?
Yes.
Sleepaway Camp as early as 1983? Is it really that early?
Yes, indeed. Think about the shorts and clothes those kids were wearing. 1986 was,
that's
still, you know, was Jason.
Dude,
no. Think Jason Lives.
83, Sleepaway Camp. Yeah,
for 83. For 1986. That's Jason Lives. That's what 80s kids looked like in 86. 83, that's the shit I was wearing in fucking, you know, grade school, you know, PS32 when I'm in, like, fourth and fifth grade gym class wearing shorts that would make a fucking hot chick blush.
I will fucking die in hell.
You know, yeah, so, I had to look, and truly, like, truly, when I think about my childhood video store horror perusals, I would have had truly Sleepaway Camp pegged as 86. I feel like 83 feels
too late.
Like when I that's, I'm just going on my own thoughts. I'm not, you know, like, obviously I'm wrong. I'm just saying, like, to my recollection, I would have pegged Sleepaway Camp in 1983 in conversation. I would have felt that I would have felt that to be a little early for Sleepaway Camp. I would have pegged it no later than 86. But that's like the timeline that I would have had in my brain. But what's funny too is that the Google, when you put Sleepaway Camp in Google, their little, like,
Google
adjectives in their little in a nutshell box says that Sleepaway Camp every word
that little nutshell.
Funny, yeah, funny, menacing, and twisted. It's just funny that funny is the word that comes first.
Oh, it is. It definitely is. Because I have a friend, I have a friend that had never seen Sleepaway Camp before, you know, because she had seen Saltburn. And she was talking about how fucked up that movie is. And I was like, you know what? You haven't seen Fucked Up until you've seen Sleepaway Camp. And she was like, oh, I'll watch it. She watched it, and then she texted me. She was like, that was the most fucked up shit I've ever seen. I was like, right? She's like, what the fuck? Like, that ending was fucking amazing. And why did that guy have a fucking electrical tape mustache at the end? I was like, yep, Sleepaway Camp. I couldn't, you know, I was like, I can't believe there's people out there that haven't seen Sleepaway Camp and have seen an ending, you know? And she's like, that was her? I was like, you know, yeah, it was. And she had a penis.
Yep. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, over time, it's become one of those things that people, in a way, kind of know about, even if they haven't seen it. Like, it's become, you know, that little, like, it's become truly like kind of like an oddity in the greater horror world. But man, seeing that for the first time when you don't know anything about it, like, that is a super fun watching experience. When I think about all of the movies that are out there that have all of the different twists and all of the different thises and the different thats, like, that's truly one that I, like, wish I could see again for the first time, you know, because now, like, even when you watch it now, sometimes you get pulled into it and you're like, all right, here it comes. But you always know it's coming and you always know, like, what you're looking for when you're watching it. But you don't know those things the first time. And, like, that's just one of those that will never, ever, ever, like, you can't duplicate it by watching it again. You know, I have deemed, personally, I have deemed the year 2024, the year that I'm finally, instead of, like, when I have my solo late night time, instead of just, like, scrolling endlessly trying to decide what it is I'm actually going to watch, I'm actually going to make attempts to truly watch things. And that is, I know I've been talking about it endlessly in the chat, but that is what has led me to watch the show Banshee, which I watched all four seasons, all 38 episodes in 3 weeks.
So
and
good.
Fucking loved it. The fucking third season of that show could be one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen. Fucking incredible.
Wow.
But I just started watching, and these are ones, this one is a little old, bit older, but some consider to next to The Sopranos maybe being the best HBO show ever. I started watching The Wire, and
The Wire is like, so fucking good.
It's come up in a couple, and I'm seven or eight episodes into the first season, and you know, that's one where like I just said about Sleepaway Camp, but like more than one person in conversation lately has said, "Oh man, I wish I can go back and see The Wire for the first time." You know, so like that's how I feel about Sleepaway Camp. Like seeing that for the first time, especially when you're like, I don't know, 15, it's fucking incredible. What an experience.
Oh God, you fuck. I was in single digit years when I fucking saw Sleepaway Camp the first time. I had so many questions. Yeah. I had no fucking idea what I was watching, man. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like literally, I seriously had like I came out of that movie with like theories. I was of an age where I was like, oh, okay. So like both the kids died and they sewed the daughter's head onto the son's body. Like it did not register to me that the aunt was like a nut and that like she fucking made the boy, you know, be a girl. Like none of that, like my simple fucking brain like turned it into this big complicated thing because, you know, the adult parts I really didn't pay attention to. All I loved about Sleepaway Camp was like, you know, we had a bunch of little kids that sounded just like us, a bunch of fucking New Yorkers cursing up a storm, saying nasty shit with each other and like talking about, you know, like wanting to feel up this chick and oh, what base did we get with that chick? Even though realistically none of us had done anything of the sort yet.
And you probably all had different definitions for each of the bases.
Oh, well, I think that's always fairly solid, man. I think, you know, first is kissing, obviously. Second's feeling the tits. Sloppy second's licking them. You know,
fingers.
Third is obviously is fingering. You know, messy third would be going down, which that I don't think was really something anybody was thinking about at those ages yet.
That was
you know, obviously, and then hitting home is, you know, fucking, you know. Come on, going all the way, sticking your bat in the fucking
hole.
All
the way.
When you're sliding in the first and you feel a juicy burst.
Oh, die a fucking rear. You know, so The Wire, you know, like for me with that one, man, I've watched the first season of that show. That's one of those shows that, like, what I found, because similar to you, Dean, like I didn't watch it when it came out. You know, it was just years and years and years of hearing people tell me, oh, you should check out The Wire. Oh, The Wire was so good. And I know some of the actors that have come out of it, and like, you know, like, and I like a lot of them, and I've heard that some of their performances in The Wire were phenomenal. I watched the first season. I really enjoyed it. But then when I went to start watching the second season, it's one of those where it like shifts, and for some reason, whatever shift it took, I wasn't going with it, so I did not finish and keep going with that show. But that is one I always mean to go back and like try to re-get into again. I found my latest fucking, you know me and these fucking shit trash TV reality shows. Like I found my latest addiction, which is fucking, you know how like your television when you have a smart TV, it's got free channels. Like, if you got a Roku, there's, like, a whole bunch of free Roku channels. If you got a Samsung, there's Samsung TV Plus, and there's a bunch of free channels. And, like, you know, like, the free channels are, like, there's, like, a Doctor Who classics. Literally, it's just Doctor Who classic episodes all day long, you know? Fucking, you know, I don't know, Court TV, and it's just old Court TV. It's not, like, live. It's not like the live television that you find on your regular channels. They're just channels that are airing.
Yeah, there's
like,
all kinds of channels
shows.
Like this, man.
So I found on fucking WeTV, okay, Women's Entertainment, a show called fucking Love After Lockup, okay?
Oh, I love that show. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Dude, it's such fucking class. It's such awesome trash TV, bro. Like, come on.
Yep.
Like, these are people that met each other, like, you know, the person on the outside, like, got in touch with an inmate, you know, through writing and stuff like that. And somehow they've developed love, okay? And some of the shit these people do and say to each other afterwards is just fucking absurd. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. They come out, they're meeting for the first time, and then they're planning to get married, like, right away. Like, we just met. Then they, like, you know, the dude gets out. He's looking to go get fucking high, drunk, do this, do that, bang on the girls, and you got the girl sitting there going, I just don't understand why he's doing this. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, bitch, he's been locked up for 8 years. What did you think he was going to do when he came out? Love you? Like, come on. You know, so it's It's just trash TV at its finest. If you ever get a chance to check it out, you know, I'm currently watching the second season. I've seen all over as far as seasons go, just because the channel, you don't have any kind of control over those channels. So, but yeah, that's been my latest craze.
No, yeah, I definitely get that. Huge fan of that show. And 90 Day Fiancé is a show that I like too, where it's like two fucking ridiculously horrible people that shouldn't be together are. And it's like, yeah, like Big Ed and his fiancés. He's like, I bought you a toothbrush. Maybe you can brush your teeth. It's like, what? This fucking just shit fucking TV. Sometimes you
Prison
need it.
Brides is a new one that just dropped. And that's only like 3 or 4 episodes out. And that one's, that one too, it's almost like they're mail order brides coming in for prisoners. Like most of these girls are from other countries. So like there's one girl coming from Australia. She's like picking up all her stuff and coming here to move to the States just so she can marry this prisoner, you know? And then you got to wonder now, like, is this a fucking visa thing? You know, are you looking just to get citizenship? Like, you know, like what is the work that's going on? And that's where it starts to get fun to watch. And like I said, that's only on like, I think the 4th episode comes out tonight for that one.
Well, I will say when you tire of your trash TV, you know where I say that you should turn your attentions to.
Yes, I know. Go back to Banshee. I have not finished it yet. So, like I said, I'm a bunch of episodes into the first season. So it's not like we weren't like
Banshee's
we
really fucking good.
I get distracted real easy.
I know. I just, you know, Ghoul, were you? I know you had said you were stepping away for a moment, but were you gone about when I said that the part of part of me for 2024 is actually like watching stuff that I've been wanting to watch for a long time. And that is what led to, like, the watching of Banshee, and that is what has led to me watching The Wire right now.
Yes.
Instead of, I don't know if you heard me say it or not, but, man, I don't want to sound, I know I sound like a broken record, but if you do get a chance to go back it's, like, totally, it's totally worth the ride, man. That was one wild fucking ride. And what's even awesome is that, like, I had no idea, and it even took me a minute, because I didn't see, like, the name in the credits, but, like, maybe in the second episode, like, it all connected, and I was like, holy shit, it's a fucking Homelander that Anthony Starr is the character also.
Oh, I recognized him right off the rip. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, no shit.
But what a fucking show, man. Like, I would probably even rewatch that one. That's how fucking much I loved it.
This is not
The Wire podcast. This is the Talking Terror podcast. And
it is.
Yes. And the director of The Ritual, which I believe might have been one of my picks previously on this show.
It was.
And The Night House and the Hellraiser remake and segments of the VHS anthology series, David Bruckner, is set to write and direct a remake of The Blob for Warner Brothers Discovery. I believe that we've all talked about how fondly we think of the original Blob remake with Kevin Dillon and Joe Seneca and Sonny Smith.
Love it.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
So hot.
And like an awesome remake before like horror remakes were like really a thing. So, but anyway, there's another The Blob in the works.
Well, and like the Ghoul and I have always said, where the fuck is that sequel to The Blob from 88? That Chuck Russell fucking movie with the fucking preacher at the end, having the frozen blob in that fucking little glass jar. I want that fucking movie.
Yeah, that would be interesting too. But you know, I think the ship has sailed on that. But who knows? Because they do direct sequels all the time. I don't know if that's such a movie that has people like that would be so into like a direct sequel too. But that was a good one. That was a really good one. I really liked that one a whole fucking lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe that's the kind of thing that you might find in like, you know, like one of those like Easter eggs, maybe like in a church somewhere, you'll see a jar that has like a little bit of it or something. I have a feeling that whatever's going to be made now is going to be made, you know, obviously using today's sensibilities and not wanting to connect to the other film. Which, yeah, again, I totally wanted. I wanted that sequel for a long fucking time, man. But I do have a, and you know, I've obviously seen the original Blob, but I have a soft spot in my heart for that 1980s remake. For
yeah.
me, obviously,
yeah,
it's
fucking
it's
great.
The better of the movies. I saw it at like the perfect time. It's one of those films in which it's like, you know, you got everything that you want for it. You know, like the kind of cool, bad at good heart type of deal, a really hot girl, you know, a couple little kids, one of the kids dies. Like, you don't see that in horror movies when you're a kid, typically. This movie's got that. You know, like, when that kid got fucking eaten, it was like, oh, shit, kids can die? No, fuck. Obviously, not thinking Sleepaway Camp at the time, which I probably did see before I saw the remake of The Blob. I think that was the case.
In the 88 Blob, when the Blob, I can't remember at the end, like towards the end, when like the Blob was like totally out of control in the town, and they all took shelter. Maybe it was the church building. But when the deputy, the red haired deputy, is like trying to put the bookcase against the wall and is like holding on, and then the like pieces of Blob come through and pull him out, and his back breaks backwards, and like he just folds backwards and yanks through the fucking wall. That shit was fucking awesome.
Yeah, they were like the town hall or like the courthouse or something.
It was something. It was something like that. But yeah. Speaking, I want to rewind a little bit because, you know, everyone is so up in arms about Frozen Empire, but your wait to see it will be a little bit shorter, as it has been moved up from March 29th to March 22nd. So those of you out there that are so desperate to see it with no spoilers will have a week shorter.
So if you're ready to see William Atherton,
not having things spoiler for you.
Get ready.
Well, that's me. I
know I'll get my
excited.
Ticket.
You know,
Oh, no, go ahead.
What's that?
No,
I was
going
to say, I'm just so fucking excited to see it. As a Ghostbusters fan, I'm so fucking excited to see it. Like, I watched that first trailer. I was like, that's it. I'm done. I don't need to see anything else. Just let me be surprised. And, yeah, I know, even though William Atherton is showing up, I'm still just so excited to just have Ghostbusters back on the big screen. Like, it just, that little kid in me that loved the Ghostbusters back when I was a kid is so excited to just see what they bring. And I'm hoping for more Ghostbusters in the future. But go ahead, Gould. What are you going to say?
Yeah, no, I mean, for starters, absolutely. You know, like, I'm hoping that potential was there in Afterlife is built on in the right ways in this film. You know, because like the Dean said, you know, Afterlife, I felt, you know, overall, I felt was a good film. Didn't love it. I didn't come away from it saying, oh, that's now my second favorite Ghostbusters film. Like, no, I would, you know, if I'm going to take the four movies, I'm going to rank them as, you know, the original, the second one, Afterlife, and then Answer the Call. You know, which is what they call the women's version or whatever it is. So, I'm hoping that they took what all the good that was there, they build on it a little bit and, you know, give us something that's, I think, a little more meatier. You know, I want a little more flavor. You know, and then, for like, you know, for me, like my most recent, I finally got back to the theater. What did I do? I went and I saw the Godzilla movie without color. You know, Godzilla -1 minus color. And you know what? It was an interesting way to watch the film. What was already a great movie. That I've seen three times now.
There you go.
I'm going for that Endgame fucking record. No, not really.
There you go.
It's the last time I'm seeing this one in theaters. I'll be waiting for the digital release whenever that happens. But I know, like, instead of just applying, like, monochrome to it or whatever it is, they went through the entire film removing the color from all of these scenes. And, you know, like, you know, basically, like, the way the director was saying, he goes, like, you know, the idea was to make it more like a, almost like a documentary from that time. And, like, I felt like watching it in this way kind of, like, gave it more of a realistic feel to the time period that the film is taking place in. The movie as it was filmed in a style that kind of had almost a, like, don't get me wrong, there's certain sequences where it's just fucking, it's gorgeous, you know, there's beautiful things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the type of film that they used, the way they filmed it, almost has this like 1950s, 60s type of like look to it. So mm-hmm. like taking the color out of it kind of just really like really makes it fit in even more to that look, and it like really gives it like this entirely different like feel. So definitely if you were a fan of it originally, you know, go give it another view. Why not? You know, I know it's up for best visuals for the Oscars. But if you haven't seen it, then it's not a bad way to see it.
That's great. Dean, did you see that trailer that you were telling us about with William Atherton, or you just know that he was in
that
trailer? So what did you think? Like, just give me a taste. Like, let me know, because I have not seen. I'm not going to see it, but you know, what are your thoughts?
You know, like I said, man, like I didn't have strong feelings for Afterlife. You know, although I saw it, mm-hmm. like I don't have like a strong yearning to see Frozen Empire, but I'll see it. And like the trailer was fine, you know, there was some notes there where I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, like I'll see it and I'll go from there. But like watching the trailer, yes. And I agree with what the ghoul had said at the top about sometimes trailers maybe include stuff that they shouldn't include that can give away a plot point or this and that. I felt that this trailer was totally like a serviceable trailer. There was nothing in it that made me think, oh man, I wish they didn't show me that. So, you know, it was a totally, you know, standard trailer for an upcoming movie.
It's very cool, you know, cause as you guys know, huge Ghostbusters fan. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, we talked about last week, you weren't a part of the show, Dean, but they're going for more real Ghostbusters feel, the cartoon show from the 80s. And I was like, you know what? I kind of want that. I kind of want to see what they can do live action with the real Ghostbusters and have that kind of vibe, because I was a huge fan of that show growing up.
We'll see what happens.
I'm excited, you know, very excited. And the fact that they moved it up, I think it's even cooler. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
You know, we have, I say we, assuming that you all feel the same, which I think you do, but we've all been waiting for them to tell us when we will ever have an opportunity to see the Toxic Avenger remake updated film, of which it has been screened, but there's been no official release date. But the Troma news that I'm here to say is that starting this year, Troma will be starting to do 4K restorations of some of their properties, starting with the original Toxic Avenger, which will come out, I think the date was February 15th. Then there will also be, throughout the year, 4K restorations of Mother's Day, the last horror film, Redneck Zombies, and more. So again, these will be starting in February. They'll be available to see on Troma's own streaming service. I haven't seen anything about wider release beyond that. But if you have been wanting to see how some of these old fun Troma movies look in 4K, your chance will be in this year of 2024.
Which is
Bloodsucking
awesome.
Freaks. Yeah, Bloodsucking Freaks, one of them.
That's a good one, too.
So, all throughout the year, we'll see the releases.
I know that they released the Toxic Avenger 4K box set, Troma did, not that long ago, that you could pick up if you like the Toxic Avenger
Troma
movies.
They did.
You know, because Lloyd's all about that money. But, yeah, I kind of with you there, Dean, where I kind of just want that fucking release date for the new Toxie. Like, I don't know why they're waiting so long. Like, just fucking release it already, man. Like, it had a great reception, you know?
Yeah, the buzz was good.
For some reason, they're holding out, and I'm surprised Lloyd's kind of sitting on it, because you think Lloyd, of all people, would be like, let's get this fucking movie out. Get it on 4K, get it on Blu-ray, like, you know, whatever you have to do, but, you know, no release date.
Get that shit in the theaters.
I would fucking be there first day. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
All right. let's see, a release date has been given for the third original Walking Dead spinoff, We Are the Ones Who Live, which is the Rick and Michonne series, which will debut on February 25th. So that's just a few weeks away from now. And they also have said that second seasons are officially a go for both Dead City and then the Daryl Dixon spinoff, which the season two one is called The Book of Carol. So McBride will be returning for that season. No info on when those might see the light of day, but second seasons have been confirmed for both of those. I watched Dead City. I haven't gotten around to Daryl Dixon yet, but I'm looking forward to the Rick and Michonne.
I mean, they're still going with it. You know, obviously, I would think there's going to be some kind of being just not about it anymore, but they're still releasing these things, so I guess there's a fan base for them.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't seen any of the trailers for the Rick and Michonne series. I still have not watched it past Rick leaving in the original series. Just, I got tired. You know, I had that kind of, you know.
Walking Dead fatigue,
like,
they call it.
Yeah. It happens, you know.
Cool. I know you had started it. Did you end up enjoying? Did you end up getting into Dead City? Did you not finish it? I feel like you watched the first one and like kind of weren't into it. Like,
I mean, we watched a few episodes of it. Ultimately, we didn't finish it, and then my AMC Plus ran out, and I wasn't paying whatever like the full amount for it is. You know, because I got a year of it free through like Apple or whatever it was, or through some service or another. So for whatever reason, like again, like they were like, yeah, your renewal's coming up, and it's I forget what it was, but I think it was like $60 for the year maybe, and I'm
that.
I'm not about
yeah,
that,
yeah,
you know,
fuck
like
that.
At all. I don't.
Yeah, I'm not about that noise.
Well, I mean, I will most likely get it again for at least, and I'll just pay monthly, when whatever the next part of the Anne Rice saga comes out, because we were enjoying the Interview with the Vampire series, we were enjoying the Witches, whatever the Witch series was that had come out. So, like, I know that that's
the Mayfair Witches.
Yes, the Mayfair Witches. So, yeah, at that point, I'll end up getting it again, and, you know, I'll try to catch up when that's the case. No, I think that's on FX. I think Shogun. Like, there's a show coming out soon called Shogun that I wanted to see. I can't remember if that was an AMC show, because if that is, then I might be getting it for that, too. That's sometime in February.
Shogun 2024.
Yeah.
That's going to be for FX.
FX, okay, so then I don't have to worry about it for that. I'll get that on Hulu.
On FX Hulu. And Hulu. Yeah.
I think the Walking Dead fatigue is real. I'm still waiting for the complete series to come out on Blu-ray or DVD. I was like, I'll buy the box set, and then I'll finish it up, you know, and you know, go from there. But, yeah, I just never watched after Rick left. I was like, that's it for me. You know, Carl died, and I was like, this whole fucking show is all over the place. You know, I just kind of dropped out of it. Yeah, remember when he fucking had that weird death? When he's just like, I'm dead. And then he fucking died, and you're like, oh, all right, well, Carl is dead now. But it's a weird one.
Everybody
and
dies.
I'll go back in. You know, but I'm like that with Riverdale, where I watched the last season of Riverdale and I thought it was kind of weak, but I was like, you know what, I'll buy the box set when it comes out, and then I'll just revisit it, and hopefully it's, you know, what I remembered. But, you know, The Walking Dead is still a great IP, apparently, you know, with the Book of Carol coming out and Daryl Dixon series coming out and Rick and Michonne, but, you know. So I don't think there's any kind of lag of that in the future. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
From one series to the next, this next series I'm excited about, although It won't be seeing the light of day for a bit. And I'm talking about the Crystal Lake TV series. A little more than a year ago, it was announced.
Okay.
It was originally planned to start shooting next month in March. Even though the strikes have been ended, it seems that everything related to the strikes in the show have pushed the beginning of shooting off a little bit, and there's no official date, but right now they say they will be shooting in the summer of 2024. So it seems like just a delay of a few months until they start shooting the Crystal Lake TV series, reminding that it is apparently, I think it said that there were like a four seasons worth of show mapped out, but they have definitely guaranteed one season, and then the network has to pay them a fine if they don't do a season two. So it's pretty much guaranteed to be at least two seasons. And as time marches on, it seems like these TV series is might be the future direction for some of these big horror franchise movies. But I'm looking forward to the Crystal Lake TV series, especially if you know, that's going to be the first thing that we see, unless a movie of some kind, a movie of some kind makes it to the big screen before then. But anyway, this summer of 2024, we'll see the Crystal Lake TV series starting to shoot.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. You know, it's great to hear that it's actually moving forward and it's actually going to be starting to film this summer. Because we also had that news, and I think you were the one that broke that, Dean, about the Halloween whole thing, about how they're potentially making a Halloween TV series that might end up on Peacock.
Rights have been sold. Whether something actually happens remains to be seen. So there has been no announcement if something is actually moving forward, but the rights have been sold.
They have. I mean, things are kind of moving forward in that sense with Halloween, as opposed to the Crystal Lake series, which is absolutely filming this summer. But it's like we always say, like, you have not seen the end of these characters, of Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees. The Crystal Lake series, I'm kind of interested in seeing how that happened, because they had said that they are going to have adult Jason in this series at some point. They're going to somehow make that happen. As far as Michael, well, I mean, it remains to be seen, because they Malik Akkad obviously wants to move forward with that. You know, but still no movement on Freddy. You know, Freddy is our only boy that hasn't really seemed to move forward in this new generation that we're going into, which I think is interesting.
Well, wasn't accepting pitches?
They were,
For Nightmare on Elm Street projects?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, the estate of West Craven was, yeah. For a little while, anyway. I know for a while, Robert Englund was saying that Kevin Bacon should take on the mantle of Freddy Krueger if they were going to move forward in this new iteration. But it seems like that's the one that hasn't really moved forward, because we did get the Leatherface movie in 2022, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, you know, for me is terrible. But, you know, it has its fans, you know, but to me that was a move backwards. Especially with this year being the 50th anniversary of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you'd like to think that there's something, you know, happening, but there's not. But at the same time, it's also the 40th anniversary of Nightmare on Elm Street. So you'd like to see something moving forward with Nightmare, but... You know, that Jack Garohale movie just kind of sticks with us. They tried. Just was not what we wanted. It was fair. It's a fair movie.
I'm mixed with it. You know, like it's weird. It's one of those when like when I think about it, I'm like, oh, you know, it really wasn't that bad, and there were parts about it that I enjoyed. And then I go to rewatch it, and I'm like, wow, how come I don't remember this being this bad? But like I said, like there are parts to it that I don't hate, but then there are things about it that I do. So I don't know. I still have a lot of fondness for that Friday remake, though. You know, the first 20 minutes of that movie are just so fucking great. And then the rest of it is like, you know, it kind of falls in like in weird spots. You know, there's stuff that was good, stuff that gets dropped. And like, yeah, I do wish that we would have gotten at least more in that world of the franchise.
It was a Friday the 13th movie. That's all it was. It was just another Friday the 13th movie. That's why it worked so well. Where, as opposed to A Nightmare on Elm Street, where you have to make a new movie where you have Jackie Earl Haley playing Freddy, and you have to bring him
Kelly
in
Lee.
As his character, you know, where you are so used to Robert Englund, now you have to get used to a new character where the makeup isn't that good and the one-liners are not that great. And it works, but it doesn't work. Like it's one of those things where, you know, you want it to work so well, but it just the execution was done so poorly. Whereas with Friday the 13th, it's like, that's just fucking Derek Mears in a Friday the 13th Jason hockey mask. And it's fun. And the characters are fun. And just it works. But with Freddy, you have to work a little bit harder because Freddy can talk. Freddy has one-liners. And it just, as a whole.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. So I look at it more and say, Freddie became one-liners. Freddie became the character that you know we will, you know, and because of Robert Englund playing it the way we do, that he does, you know, that is how we will forever know it. You know, but at the same, like I do get what they were trying to do with Jackie Earl Haley there, but it just you can't. You know what I mean? The character is too established as what Robert Englund has done with it. And that's really what it comes down to. There's no way to reestablish him as necessarily violent and scary. Like you really can't do it. I mean, it just won't work. You know, like you said, he talks, he's got a personality. And unfortunately, that personality is so intrinsically tied to that character now, there's just no way to break it, you know? So it ain't like Freddy. It ain't like Jason. I'm sorry. It ain't like Jason. It ain't like Leatherface. It ain't like where you can, like, take these characters and, like, you can reinvent them by putting them in, like, darker makeup or change the mask up, give them a cool new chainsaw, let them kill you a couple different ways, make them the really good-looking guy with the build, like, stuff like that, you know, like, and that makes it kind of different. But, like, you can't do that with Freddy. And, like, you know, and with the makeup thing, I mean, the makeup wasn't bad. They were just going for more of a realistic burn victim. You know, so yes, it does have less of a look as the iconic Freddy makeup.
Yeah, I mean it's completely true, and because you brought up Leatherface, like that 2017 Leatherface movie, where you see the big fucking guy, and the entire time like that's Leatherface, that's going to be him, that's who it's going to become, and they're like, no, let's get the fucking really fucking handsome fucking skinny guy, and he's going to be Leatherface. Like what? All right, sure, but that, no, you had the fucking really big fat guy. You had the bill.
I finally watched that for like the first time.
Did you?
Like this past year. I finally did, but like nothing will ever come out of my head from when you had seen it And, like, you just, like, you didn't get, you gave no fucks. You were like, bro, like, I don't get it. Like, what the fuck? The entire movie, you got this big, lumbering, heavyset fucking idiot who you definitely are like, that's definitely Leatherface. That's definitely Leatherface. And then it's like, oh, no, tricked you is the handsome guy who's real personable the entire movie. That's the guy that ends up being Leatherface. You were like, and that makes fucking sense. You fucking could not care less. It was like, whatever. I thought it was so funny. I didn't give a fuck that you spoiled it. But yes, but watching it finally, I was like, oh, I see exactly what he was complaining about, because I, too, would have thought the entire fucking time the other guy was Leatherface. And see what we did there, Dean? That's a spoiler, bitch.
Oh, man. I was planning to watch that movie today.
Oh, no.
I can't believe you ruined it.
I know. You're going to go and you ruin Weep later. I know what's up.
He's a really fucking shy, big, weird guy. That's going to be Leatherface. No, we're going to make the fucking guy talk to Leatherface.
Crying and weeping.
So sad. But all right, dude,
leaping
you're so far
and dancing.
Leaping and dancing.
Leaping and dancing. It says right here in your book, Reverend.
Leaping
there
and
was
dancing.
A time for this law, but no more. It's our time.
It's our time.
Sorry, no. We're gonna cross the stream. It's our time down here. Our parents want the best of stuff for us. Up there. It's their time. Up there.
Ecclesiastes assures us that there's a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to laugh.
Sure.
A time to weep. A time to mourn. And there is a time to dance.
Fucking A, Kevin Bacon.
No,
thank
dance.
You.
All right. So, getting into some more current items here. Black Mirror, in the previous season, had an episode called USS Callister.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was so popular, this episode, that it was nominated for 7 different Emmys and won 4 Emmys. Now, it seems that a USS Callister spinoff series is in the works at Netflix, with plans to shoot this spring, and all details as far as what it will be about are being kept under wraps, but when they talk about spin-off series, they're talking about a 3-episode limited series. Once again, that's based on the episode USS Callister from the Black Mirror anthology program.
All right, that was a good one. Looking forward to that.
Is that the one that kind of plays off like a Star Trek episode?
Yes, it does.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, that was definitely a good episode. You know the one everybody really wants a fucking, you know, everybody wants a limited series of fucking Striking Vipers. That's what everybody really wants. Let's not lie. Yeah. Okay.
The fan base was there. Oh, my God, Striking Vipers.
That's what they need for trash TV. That's perfect,
I'm still
man.
Waiting.
Get people up in virtual reality, video game types of things. You don't know if they're male. You don't know if they're female. If they're on screen, like video game chemistry works, you then have to introduce them to each other in real life and see if the sparks really fly.
Yeah, waiting for that one. Fucking episode, man.
Will they dock?
You and the monkey were right. That was insane. Yeah. All right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
Did you ever see the Striking Vipers episode, right, Dean?
I have not. That's one that I'm planning to get back to this year. I'm way behind. I'm way behind on Black Mirror.
Listen, don't even worry about watching the other episodes. Remember, it's an anthology series. Every episode is separate anyway.
Yeah, I know. I know what Black Mirror is. I've seen the first. I've definitely seen the entire first and probably the entire second season of Black Mirror. I know full well that it's an anthology. Plus, I don't live under a rock. I report on news related to fucking horror every fucking week that I'm on the fucking show. So I think I know a little something about what Black Mirror is. So take your Striking Viper and Viper it up your ass.
Listen, I know you've been away. I know you want to talk about being, doing the news for every week of a show, but, I don't know, you've been gone for like the last 3, so we haven't had news.
Excuse me, I said I've been doing the news every episode that I'm on the show.
Gotcha.
I was very careful in my word choice. But anyway,
indeed.
I will I will check out the Striking Vipers, it's called?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I will...
Don't read the synopsis. Just watch it.
Okay. Got it. Striking Vipers. Maybe tonight. So. What is so funny about that?
Oh,
no, you'll see.
Oh, you'll see. I just can't wait to hear your reaction on the whole thing. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Okay. All right. So there's that. And now going their separate ways for a while, Joel and Ethan Coen, known, of course, throughout Hollywood as the Coen brothers, apparently are reuniting. Yes.
And it feels so good.
They are reuniting. They have a new script, and they're going to be directing what's being called a pure bloody horror film with comedy. They said all the prep work is done, and they're just waiting on Joel to finish a project that he's currently working on. So it seems the Coen brothers are reuniting to make a horror film.
Can't fucking wait. I love the Coen brothers. Blood Simple is like one of their best fucking movies. So the fact that they want to go back and do another bloody horror movie, sign me up. Can't go wrong with
the Coen brothers. Raising Arizona.
Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait.
I think I fucking love Raising Arizona. I mean, they have episode. I mean, they have a
classic
filmography, like, has very little compare, you know. But so many fucking classics. But God, do I fucking love
Lebowski.
Raising Arizona. So anyway, yeah. So
there's
the
money,
yes, the Coen brothers.
they're fucking nihilists.
So
they don't care about
anything. Looking at the clock here. There's a couple quick things just that I want to just get through so we can get to the movie. One of those is that apparently, and I am not a comics person, so this is a type of comic that I have not heard of before, but apparently in the Marvel Universe, they've had a What If comic series, which tells stories of existing comics and what would have happened if the previous story had gone in a different way. And apparently... Well, not apparently. There is going to be another edition of the Marvel What If comic book series, and this one is going to be based on the movie Aliens, and it's going to tell the story of what happened if Paul Reiser's character of Carter Burke had survived the events of Aliens. And not only that, Paul Reiser himself is co-writing this particular issue.
Interesting. I think he got what he deserved in the Aliens, but what if he didn't die?
Yes.
Very cool.
And then the final thing on the list here, I should have put an asterisk with my other Blumhouse story from the top, but this also a Blumhouse story. Jason Blum is establishing and will be curating a horror movie museum that will be located inside the Stanley Hotel in Estes, Colorado. The Stanley Hotel, of course, the filming location for The Shining. The plan is for this mini Academy Museum to open sometime in the year 2026 and will feature all kinds of exhibits from the Blumhouse world of movies, TV shows, and gaming offerings, and beyond. So a Blumhouse horror museum inside the Stanley Hotel coming sometime in the year 2026.
All right. Looking forward to that. I know that the Stanley Hotel kind of balked at their haunted history for a little while. They didn't really want to talk about it. But now they're embracing it, so very cool. But all right, with that being said, Dean, it is your pick tonight of Suitable Flesh from 2023, directed by Joe Lynch. So why don't you go ahead and give us a plot synopsis and what you thought about it.
All right. Historically, we've had Freaky Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We've had 17 again. We've had vice versa.
Good one.
We've had the changeup. We've had 13 going on 30. We've had the hot chick. We've had 18 again. We've had dream a little dream. We've had like father, like son. And now we have suitable flesh. Directed by Joe Lynch, with the story adapted from an H.P. Lovecraft short story from 1937 called The Thing on the Doorstep. And again, Suitable Flesh from 2023, starring Heather Graham, Judah Lewis, Bruce Davison, and Barbara Crampton, longtime horror veteran, looking quite good for 65, I must say.
Oh, yeah.
In this film, we have, Barbara Crampton's character, Dr. Upton, who is counseling her friend, another doctor, played by Heather Graham. I'd like to think, that this is like what happened to Roller Girl after she moved beyond porn. But anyway, we have a crazy story about corpses and brains and body switching and sex and all of this great stuff, leading to many surprises along the way in the film Suitable Flesh.
What did you think about it?
Thank you. You're welcome, Ghoul. You're welcome. I kind of liked it. I like Heather Graham. I feel like I haven't seen her in anything in like a really long time. I thought this was a totally fine horror movie. It's been in my list. I know it's a recent film, but from whenever I heard about it the first time, it went right into my notes. I was glad to hear that it was on Shudder. Apparently, it just hit Shudder a few days ago on January 26th. But I did watch it on Shudder today, and I liked it. You know, I don't think this is the greatest horror movie I've ever seen. No. I'm glad that I decided to make it my pick and kind of enjoyed the ride.
So, Ghoul, what did you think about Suitable Flesh?
I knew nothing about the film. No spoilers. I know William Atherton wasn't in it.
Bruce Davison was.
Bruce Davison, indeed, he was. And it's funny, I see Bruce Davison, and every time I think about Bruce Davison, I just think of him turning into a melty fucking thing of water in the X-Men film. this always makes me fucking laugh when I think about the guy.
Well, the future, Charles.
Well, the future, Charles, not them. So Suitable Flesh, though. So, obviously going into the film, I know nothing about it. So I don't know that this is based on a Lovecraft story. I don't know who's in it, until I obviously go to look and boot it up and I see Heather Graham on the front. And, yeah, just like you, I'm happy to see Heather Graham. You know, I feel like I haven't seen her in a while either. And I totally get your Roller Girl vibes. She's definitely fucking like Roller Girl in this movie, which was nice. The sex scenes in this film definitely gave off 1990s Skinamax level, like late night vibes. It might not be the sex movie that Skinamax is playing that night. Like, that might not come on until like 2:30. That's what comes on like after this movie. This movie comes on.
Yeah, this
at,
is
like,
the warm up.
30. This is what comes on at 12:30 on Cinemax, and you're like, oh, wow, man, this is a fucked up film. And, again, if this was the 90s and I was fucking, tripping balls or just fucking stoned off my fucking ass watching this, I probably would have really enjoyed this movie. It feels like a 90s film. But, again, overall, when all was said and done with the movie, I did enjoy it. It's just like you said, it's not the greatest film I've ever seen, but it's... as soon as I heard Miskatonic University, I'm like, oh, okay, so this is taking place in the same world as Reanimator and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Once I heard that, I kind of know what I'm looking at in terms of quality, and that made it a lot easier for me to just swallow the movie as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Kay? How did you feel about it?
you know, and this was one of those movies I was looking forward to last year. You know, it didn't make my top 10 list, but it was close because I really enjoyed it. I rented it late in 2023. I'm a big fan of Joe.
You had seen this. You had seen this prior. You had seen this already.
I had. Yes, I had already seen it. This was a second rewatch. But I'm a huge fan of Joe Lynch. The fact that Dennis Paoli was a screenwriter for this movie got me excited because he did the screenwriting for Reanimator and From Beyond. Worked a lot with Stuart Gordon back in the 80s. So I was expecting something really kind of fun, and I got it. But like the Ghoul had said, it feels like a movie that you would have seen in the 90s. Like, this is definitely like Skinamax territory. It hit all those check marks. Was it a great movie? No, but I think it had that Stuart Gordon, Brian Yuzna kind of flavor to it that Joe Lynch was trying to go for. Just, it didn't really push the From Beyond Reanimator vibes that I wanted. But it was still an enjoyable ride overall, you know. And The Thing on the Doorstep is a great short story by H.P. Lovecraft, if you ever get a chance to check it out. And they did take a lot of liberties with the story, some name changes, et cetera. But overall, it was great. And to see Heather Graham kind of playing the post-Roller Girl kind of vibe, and then Barbara Crampton as well, it's always great. Plus Bruce Davison, who obviously X-Men, Willard, it's always great to see him too. But so in the scope of this movie, it opens at Miskatonic Medical School in Arkham, Massachusetts, with a body bag being opened by a mortician who is joined by Dr. Daniela Upton. The victim was murdered by a friend of Daniela's, Dr. Elizabeth Derby. Daniela goes to visit Elizabeth, where she is being held in the psych unit. Elizabeth demands that the brain of the murder victim be destroyed, and then begins to tell the sordid tale of how everything came to be. So Derby, at one time, had the perfect idyllic life with her own private psychiatric practice with her husband, Eddie, played by That Thing You Do star Jonathan Shake. Always good to see him in a much more muted role this time.
Oh, God. So this actor, mm-hmm. right? I'm looking at him in this movie, and I'm like, man, I know this fucking guy. Where do I know him from? So he is the – so in the 90s, there were this trilogy of films that came out that I forget how I ended up getting one of them, but, like, I got the one on VHS. It was called The Doom Generation. Which was part.
That's a good fucking movie.
Yes.
Yeah, we watched
film
that together.
Was Nowhere. So yes, so they're done by this director called Greg Araki. I could never find the first film. I think that one's hard to get. I think you can watch it on YouTube now, though.
What was the first one called?
That's how off it is. It's one of those where it's like, even the name of it is like a little bit. But it's long. It's like a long-winded name, if I remember right. It's like something.
Oh. The
totally
Doom Generation.
That's what it is.
Totally Fucked Up, and then Nowhere.
Yeah, well, it's Totally Fucked Up, The Doom Generation, then Nowhere. That's the order of films. It's called the Teenage Apocalypse Trilogy. So, like, as teenagers, you know, like, I catch the movie, and, like, again, like, it's the 90s. We're guys in New Jersey. Like, you know, some of our exposure to like city stuff is just starting to happen when I'm seeing these movies. So like a lot of like Greg Araki stuff is very, very homoerotic. So like it was one of those where you kind of don't know how to like
finger in the butt
necessarily, but they were all fucking like
taking an ass
films. And this actor is actually the lead. He's one of the lead roles in The Doom Generation. So I'm looking at this motherfucker saying, man, I know this fucker from that, but that's him young. Then the most recent thing I actually know him from is from the CW's DC Universe stuff. He plays Jonah Hex in Legends of Tomorrow and all the stuff that was on those the Flash and everything, like with Crisis. So that's where I'm like, that's where I know him looking like this. And that's also probably why he's as buff as he is.
And he looks good. So after a session with a patient, a young man arrives at her office and asks to talk to her. He introduces himself as Asa Waite and tells her that he believes his father is occasionally occupying his body. During the session, Lisa receives a phone call from his father.
Daddy, no.
And he appears to have a seizure before acting as nothing happened, as well as behaving completely differently. Elizabeth is troubled by this development, and that evening, she even imagines Asa in Eddie's place having sex with her. So while Eddie's trying to get it on with her, she's like, not happening. Then all of a sudden, Asa shows up, and she's like, fuck yeah, let's get the fucking coming happening. So she later ends up going to Asa's house, having remembered his address that he told her from earlier, and discovers his father, Ephraim, to be horribly sick, relying on pills to keep him alive. She finds out that Asa ran off days ago, and that's when she spots a book with strange symbols and drawings that Ephraim tells her to mind her own business about. She tells him that she would have to have people call.
Got a heart condition. Angina.
So, you know. So without Asa being there, she tells Ephraim that she could just make one phone call regarding Asa's endangered home life, but Ephraim brandishes the large knife, but then has a coughing fit soon afterwards. She checks on Ephraim, but he ends up cutting her finger with the knife, and she flees to go home. One day at her office, while hypnotizing a patient, Asa stops by to tell her that his father wants his body. She watched Ephraim take over his body when he had that seizure in her office, but she doesn't believe him. She asks him to wait while she finishes with this particular patient, but Asa ends up leaving. So that night, Asa calls Elizabeth as she drives to his house, finding Ephraim dying on his floor. Asa refuses to let Elizabeth hand him his pills, but Elizabeth defies his orders, though she isn't able to stop Ephraim's apparent death. Asa tells her that they must destroy Ephraim's brain because if he says an incantation a third time, he will take over Asa's body. Ephraim, revealed to be alive, utters this incantation and causes Asa to have a seizure before seemingly dying a second time. Asa now all of a sudden appears very much more confident and then proceeds to fuck Elizabeth on top of a desk with Ephraim's body laying on the floor. But during this moment of passion, he whispers an incantation into her ear, which causes them to briefly switch bodies. So she is in his body, he's in hers, but of course, Ephraim notices that Ephraim's body is missing, prompting him to take the elongated knife and chase after him. Ephraim begs Elizabeth to help him as he's actually Asa in Ephraim's body, but the real Ephraim, now in Asa's body, stabs him in the neck with the knife before decapitating him fully as a knocked-over candle causes the house to briefly catch fire. So, a lot going on for Elizabeth tonight. Just not having a great time. You know, and just being completely in a panic, Elizabeth eventually talks to her friend, Daniela, about the body switch, but Daniela doesn't understand what she means. Daniela chalks it up to Elizabeth feeling guilty about having sex with Asa and that she should talk to Eddie about it. So back at home, two detectives show up to the Derby residence and they push Elizabeth on fire. They question her a little bit about the fire that happened at the Wade house and about her missing phone that was found on the property. And Ephraim is currently listed as a missing person. And the whole thing has that kind of 90s vibe, as we were talking about, the two detectives showing up. So Elizabeth eventually comes clean to Eddie about having sex with Asa, and he just doesn't want anything more to do with her. Just, you know, I can't believe he did that. So while sleeping at her office, she has a dream where Asa goes down on her, but then turns into Ephraim and pushes her out of a window to her death. And in that moment, she decides, I got to go home and make up with Eddie, because that's the right thing to do in this particular moment. So meanwhile, Ephraim, still in Asa's body, handcuffs himself to a pole in the cellar and calls Elizabeth, reading the incantation and causing the two to switch bodies. Elizabeth in Asa's body discovers piles of flesh as well as drawings of a strange creature in the cellar. Elizabeth then calls Daniela asking her for help, and you need to come to this address that I can give you. And then she gives that address and anxiously awaits for Daniela to arrive. But meanwhile, in Elizabeth's body, Ephraim is just having a great fucking time. I got tits now. I have a pussy that I can play with. This is fucking great. I'm having the best time. When Eddie returns home, she's like, you know what? I'm going to have sex with Eddie. Which involves using a knife to cut off his fucking boxers and then riding him to full fucking, you know, explosion, where Eddie's just having the time of his life having sex with his wife that he doesn't quite realize is not her. Daniela arrives at the house of Ephraim and Asa, and Elizabeth tries to convince her that she's stuck in Asa's body, and realizing Ephraim is in her body, calls the police to save Eddie's life. The two detectives from earlier arrive and see Elizabeth is fine, so they take Eddie into another room for more questioning. Back in the cellar, Daniela threatens Elizabeth and Asa's body with being committed to Miskatonic if she doesn't hear the truth. And just as Elizabeth manages to get Daniela on her side, she and Ephraim switch bodies. So they have their shake, they have their twisting, and on the floor, and then they are back in the bodies that they belong in. And, of course, the detectives are like, well, we hope we don't have to come here again. And Eddie's like, God damn, I came so fucking hard. Can we just talk outside? Like, Eddie's just like, I want more of that puss.
And he's like a whole new character at this point.
He really becomes, he becomes a totally different, like, I want that again. And to see him acting like that when Elizabeth is back in her own body, he's like, do you want to do that again? Want to fucking go again? Shit, what the fuck are you talking about?
He pulls out the cigarette.
I never changed so hard.
Smoking, he's like, I'm just glad I don't got to fucking hide it anymore.
He's so excited. And he's like, I'm so glad. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, you don't remember? Like, oh, God, it was so good. But in this particular moment, Elizabeth realizes that the next body swap will be forever. So she returns to her office and attempts to jump out of a window. But Ephraim arrives and tells her that she can escape if she can successfully kill him and destroy his brain. So she decides to brandish a knife and use that as a way to hypnotize him. So flashing it back and forth to hypnotize him. And it works briefly. And Elizabeth takes this opportunity to stab him in the head with the knife before throwing out of the window. But falling out of the window to his particular death, that's not enough. Elizabeth runs downstairs and gets into her car and decides to ram this body over and over again until she feels like it's dead, but still not enough, had to take out the fucking knife and stab him repeatedly until the cops show up and tell her to get off of the body.
I thought in this sequence that it was a really cool use of the backwards cam in the car.
Yes, yep. To see the body continually getting smashed. No, it was a great use of it.
Mm-hmm. The getting smashed and then the pulling away and then it's smashing again and you still heard like you can like kind of see through the camera what was going on, but there was good sound effects. Like I thought that whole like I feel like I haven't seen them like in a movie them like use the reverse camera
the
inside
cam
of a car
like
to show like that. I thought it was pretty cool.
It was really cool. And just to see it happen over and over again and then to see the body slump over. I liked, and the fact that she wasn't satisfied with that, so she had to take out the knife and then repeatedly stab the body over and over again. You get to see the little slash marks in the body. I kind of like that, too. And I did forget to mention that earlier in the movie, when we meet Elizabeth for the first time, Joe Lynch, the director, played one of the hospital orderlies. He's the one with the mustache. So if you want to know what Joe Lynch looks like, there he is.
Do you want a mustache, Ryan?
Yo, he sure. I was waiting for that, but it didn't quite happen. So with this happening, now we have that kind of flash to the present day. And we get to see the damage done to the body of Asa, who is actually Ephraim, and the heavily mutilated corpse awakens during the autopsy. And I love the coroner played by Graham Skipper in the scene because he's eating that Reuben sandwich and he's like, oh, you're not even alive to understand what's going on here right now. So he puts that sandwich down, cuts into the chest, he's like, he's not dead, oh, shit, runs the fuck out of the room as the corpse falls to the floor and crawls. And you know this is Elizabeth in this particular moment. And even the guards, like, what the fuck's going on? And, of course, you have to have the one guard just like, what? I ain't paid enough of this shit. This body. So Elizabeth and the corpse's body begins to crawl through the hospital, while Ephraim decides to switch bodies with Daniela, causing the two of them to have a drawn-out fight. And then in Daniela's body, Ephraim begs a security guard named Mace to shoot Daniela, but she manages to get his gun and kills Elizabeth in Ace's body, ending the suffering once and for all. But then, of course, the poor security guard.
His body is so fucked. His body's so fucked up. It's like really
so
fucked,
fucked up.
Like you almost you gotta like feel bad for the fucking kid, you know? Like he's really just God.
Like that piece of leg stump fucking sliding across the fucking floor.
And it sucks because whatever magic like keeps him the fuck alive. Like I do wish they, and maybe that's budgetary and all of that. But like I do wish they could have like explored some of like what the creature was. You know what I mean? Like I know we get these conversations with it where it doesn't know if it was a male, it doesn't remember if it was a female. I kind of started thinking that it was the because we see that one picture in the basement of what looks like like a beholder almost. You know what I mean? Like one of them fucking like weird H.P. Lovecraft like tentacle creatures.
Like a Cthulhu creature.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And I kind of like, in my mind, like I'm thinking that's what it was. You know what I mean? I don't feel like it was ever human to begin with. I feel like whatever got summoned, you know, got summoned into a human body and it's just been spending, you know, generations just hopping around and fucking doing whatever it pleases.
Yeah, I like the fact that they kept it kind of ambiguous, where you don't really know what this creature is, like how it manages the hot bodies. Like, why would it pick Ephraim, who is an old man riddled with diseases that just has to constantly smoke pot to get rid of the pain? You know, why wouldn't it want to go to somebody young like Asa? Well, of course, you have to recite the incantations.
Smoke pot. No, he's rolling cigarettes, man. And the creature does it. Not
I thought
Ephraim.
It was pot.
Ephraim, that's because the creature likes the tobacco. The creature likes it. That's why we see her later pull out the same shit and starts rolling it up. You know what I mean? So he's been smoking for however long, you know what I mean? And, like, that's, he's just, he's been doing it so long, he rolls them himself, that type of deal, you know?
Yeah, see, I thought it was weed. Wow. Like, I honestly thought it was green, weed.
Man.
Yeah, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it was probably just tobacco that he was rolling up, but I was just like, I don't know. I like the fact that I thought it could be weed.
We got tobacco.
And that he was rolling them. You know, because he was constantly rolling it up and you know, just enjoying it. So I was like, hey, this is a weed. Because I thought it was something that, you know, in this old body of Ephraim, this creature probably needed to take the pain away. So it was just rolling up weed, you know, constantly and just smoking it. But, you know, probably it was just tobacco, which is weird. But so when they switch bodies, Ephraim shoots Mace to death before continuing the fight. And I was like, poor fucking Mace. Like, this guy was just like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I just want to be a security guard. And gets his brains blown out the back of his head and shot multiple times. You know, but they continue the fight. Daniela is getting ready to stab the body with a scalpel, but Ephraim recites the incantation again before the two are eventually separated by police officers. And sometime later, Daniela consoles Eddie in her office, and she's like, well, you know, she was my best friend, and I know this is hard for you, but I'm going to be here for you whenever you need me. And once, again, Eddie is weird because Eddie's just like, oh, okay. he's like, I'm never going to get to tap that again. Like, that's horrible. But his reaction was just kind of nonplus, where he's just kind of, I guess, dealing with the trauma of what happened. So when he leaves, we see Daniela returning to her office and then again rolling up the homemade cigarettes that we just talked about. And we understand that now this is Ephraim in Daniela's body. And the real Daniela is trapped inside the body of Elizabeth, who is currently strapped to a straitjacket and screaming her life away in this padded cell. I mean, it was a great way to kind of end the movie, because it's just constant fucking body swaps. Like the Dean was saying at the start, where it's just constant jumps from one body to another. And the fact that this creature could do it so very easily by reciting this incantation.
Just like that.
And just could be happy being a female, because like the Ghoul said, this creature might be a female, could be a male, but it definitely, I think, enjoys being in the female body most of all.
Female body, because it's probably been so long since it was a female. Like I got the feeling that it had been a male for a long period of time. Yes, the Ghoul Girl is showing me that she is indeed female. I was not aware of that.
I have nipples. Can you milk me?
Oh, you want to be milked?
Yeah. But yeah, it's just it's one of those things where, like, I feel like this movie could have done very well in the 90s. It feels like it came a little bit too late. Like, I would have loved to have seen what Stuart Gordon could have done with the material, because I felt like he, of all people, was a huge Lovecraft fan, you know, as we had seen in his movies like From Beyond and Reanimator, Brody Reanimator, that he did with Brian Yuzna. It seemed like Joe Lynch was trying to make that kind of love letter to Stuart.
Absolutely.
You know, with this movie. And it definitely had that feel, but at the same time, I kind of wanted it to be more gross. Like, I was kind of hoping that it would be a little bit grosser than it was. Because
it had the feel, mm-hmm. It had the parentage, it just didn't have the style. You know, and that's kind of like what it was missing. It, you know, like you said, like there was that one sequence when he's cutting the throat and there's blood spurting everywhere and it's like a big messy mess. Like, the movie could have used more of that.
100%. Like, I like that scene, you know, when he's cutting off Bruce Davison's head and then he shows it to Elizabeth and then the blood comes out of the mouth and, help me. Stuart Gordon level, like we're there. we've got that. So I felt like the hallmarks were there. And like I said at the start, Dennis Paoli was the screenwriter for this movie, you know, who had previously worked on Reanimator and From Beyond and Brody Reanimator and a lot of Stuart Gordon movies. So I felt like the spirit was there, but it just kind of felt like it came a little bit too late. Like, this movie probably would have been fucking awesome back in the 90s on Cinemax at 12:30 in the morning. Like, oh, fuck, this is so cool. But, you know, it was great to see Joe Lynch kind of do that Lovecraftian horror, because he has been known for action movies of late. Wrong Turn 2 was his kind of start into, you know, being a director. But, you know, it had all the right beats. And you know, Heather Graham, I just completely kind of forgot about, like you guys had said, where I was like, oh yeah, that's right, yeah, she's an actress
for sure.
I kind of forgot.
You're gonna fuck,
you know,
you're gonna fuck. It's my big dick, Jack. It's my big dick.
And yeah, like even that scene when she gets seduced by Asa in that scene when he's Ephraim, but he's seducing her with Asa, you know, and they get that fucky fucky going on, you know, and she's like, oh, I'm going to come. I'm like, all right, well, that's an improvised line. I like it. I'm here for it. I'm right back at Boogie Nights.
She's fucking on him, man. She's riding away. She was using all them Boogie Night fucking roller girl skills, man. You could tell.
Oh,
you could tell. Yeah. She watched some porn to get into that roller girl fucking that role, and she's definitely utilizing it here.
Absolutely.
Now, like
you remember,
although she didn't stick with it, if you remember towards the end of Boogie Nights, like, roller girl does attempt to go back to school, and although she didn't stick with it, because, you know, and maybe she did, but she's, you know, skating around
the
jacket at the end of the movie.
The kids start,
but like,
giving
if
her
she
a
did ultimately
her blowjob mouth and she leaves.
No, that was early. That was early. Later on in the film, they show her like kind of sitting in the classroom, like looking longingly out the window, like towards the end. Not that early part, because that's the kid that gets her in the limousine later. But showing everyone has kind of gotten their shit together. But I had this thought. I'm like, Roller Girl, like, stuck with school and became, like, a counselor, like, and moved beyond porn. I was like, oh, like, this is, like, the Roller Girl, like, the Roller Girl future Roller Girl spinoff movie. I just had that thought.
You know,
I'm not saying that's what it is.
I typically put that on and I go to sleep to it now. If I remember right, when we see that end sequence, he asks her to move the garbage from one side of her room to the other. If you look on her desk, I think she's got school books. I think she is actually working on her school as well. I think, like, it's in the scene. I think you do see that.
I love that movie.
It's so fucking good. We talk about it enough, but yeah, no, it was great to kind of see her back, in this movie and kind of embracing the sexual side of herself.
In a whore.
This particular, I just was kind of hoping for more of Barbara Crampton being a little bit sexual, because she looks fucking great.
She's up there.
They had that moment in the cell where Elizabeth was, like, touching on her pussy and shit. I was like, oh, fucking make it happen. Just fucking just make it out. I'd be so happy right now. But it didn't quite happen.
For me, it's one of those weird things because, like, I know, like, probably your parents are, like, older than her character now, right? So, like, my mom is, like, younger still than her character, like, than the actress is currently. Like, that actress to me is, like, grandma age, not, like, hot older mom
really?
Age, like, at all. Like, nah.
She was hot
in the day, dude. Reanimator days, like, yeah, you know what? She was good looking. We saw her titties plenty. It was good.
I was just saying that she looked good for her age in this. She's 65,
Looks fantastic.
She looks pretty good.
Yeah. I think that she aged better. Like, because I saw her in Reanimator and From Beyond back in the day when I was younger, and I'm like, I don't really see it that much. But when she got older, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, she looks better now that she's older.
You're a granny banger. You're a granny banger. You like granny
porn. I am.
Porn.
I do like him older. I do like him older. I can't lie, but... I just felt like she got hotter, as she got older with a lot of these actresses. But, and seeing her in this movie, I'm like, oh, there's going to be one moment she might pop a tit out. But I'm like, no, she's probably not like that anymore. Like, probably like that Dee Wallace era where Dee Wallace is like everybody's, mom. She's not showing anything. that's what happened, But came close. Because I do think that she looks great, for her age. I mean, my mom was in her 70s, and I was like, so much older than Barbara Crampton. But, still was kind of hoping for that because it was playing with it. I kind of wanted her to play with Eddie a little bit more towards the end. She does give him a little kiss on the cheek, but I'm like, oh, maybe she should be like, hey, why don't you come over sometime? But that didn't happen either. But I think Eddie's just like shocked. He's like, I just came for the first time ever. Now I'm never going to have that again because she's locked up. She did the things she did. Just like the Wonders. But still an enjoyable movie. It's on Shudder if you guys want to check it out. So next week, the film pick comes to me. And since this year I am turning 40, so a big fucking milestone for me. I didn't think I was ever going to see 40, to be honest. I know, right? Like, I'm going to be 40? Like, I never thought I would see 40. I just lived that hard fucking lifestyle for a while. Where I was like, it's probably never going to happen. But I am turning 40 this May. So a couple of my picks are going to be from the year 1984, the year of my birth. So I am going to pick 1984's Splatter University, directed by Richard W. Haynes. It's available on Plex. It's also available on Screambox, since I know you boys have that, Ghoul and Dean. So we're going to go back to 1984 and talk about Splatter University.
But where else is it available?
Plex.
Pulling it right now. It's available on Plex. It is available as an Amazon rental for $1.99.
Okay. So
yeah,
Plex
it's available
for
free on Plex. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's still available, you know, and I'm sure if you probably pulled up YouTube and just typed in Spider University 1984, it'll show up. But I wanted to talk about some picks from... Oh, God. What's happening? Somebody just died. There goes the power.
Like, rip your house apart?
No, I'm fine. Why? What happened?
Something's going on with
you
sound at the moment.
No.
Are you standing out in the storm?
No, I'm right.
we believe you. Yeah, I was going to say we believe you. It's hard over there, but yeah. So,
and
yeah.
The school is right. Splatter University is also in full in HD on... available to watch on YouTube.
So, well, yeah, there you go.
Kidding. Thank you.
I apologize.
We will talk about it next week on the show. My pick of the week, Splatter University from 1984, the year I fucking busted out of my mom's vagina and said I fucking hate life. We will talk about that later on. But, all right. So, do you want to go ahead and sign yourself off?
Splatter University. We'll get educated. The year of the king's birth. I can't wait. It's going to be so exciting.
Amen. Cool. Why don't you go ahead and send stuff off?
Stay scared, everybody. Stay scared.
As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show where we talked about the demonic Dean's film pick of the week, Suitable Flesh. Hail yourselves. Hail Satan. Hail Odorous. Watch horror movies. Keep America strong. And we'll see you back here next week for 1984's Splatter University.
Yay.